Thank you, Dave. Okay, let's do the cash grain market. On stage with us, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, Aaron Curtis from Midco, Matt Bennett from TGM, and Chuck Shelby with Risk Management Commodities. And we're going to ask a quick question of them because most of us have been befuddled for several months because the price of cash corn has been above the price in Chicago for a long time, and that's usually not the case in any commodity where we live in the primary growing regions. It does happen from time to time in places outside of those growing regions, but not certainly when you're in the primary growing regions. So, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, why has the basis been over the price of futures in Chicago for so many months?
I think one big reason is the demand has been very good. Ethanol usage, prior to the first of the year, we were processing corn into ethanol, you know, to take advantage of the blender's credit. You know, that's 5 billion bushels of corn that we didn't use 10, 15 years ago. And it has to be in the right place. You know, they may have big crops in Iowa, Minnesota, but if we need corn for the ethanol plants in Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, basis levels have to reflect that. So that's one reason why we've seen extremely strong basis levels. You know, the other reason is, you know, I think people pointed this out earlier, old crop, new crop are two different commodities. And I think we want to keep that in mind when we talk about corn. The old crop stocks are very tight. July corn's trading at 90 cent premium to December. But the potential for a big new crop is out there. So things can change in 9 months. We can go from a relatively small amount to a relatively big amount. And so that's one thing I think we want to keep in mind is you know, marketing old crop differently than new crop.
Aaron Curtis, why such a strong basis?
Well, partly what Greg said. I think the demand base continues to be very strong, but also the fact we haven't seen a lot of producer movement here since fall time frame. We've had three different instances in nearby corn, we've been stuck in a 20 to 30 cent range, kind of bored us to sleep in a lot of instances. We finally saw cash prices, at least in Illinois, get up to that 650 mark, so the producer did reward it. I think we judge our busyness as far as how active the producer is by how active our phone is. When the elevator buys grain from the farmer, they call us and hedge it, and there were a lot of dead periods since harvest ended that we just haven't seen a lot of producer movement. We've finally seen some of that movement start to pick up here in the last couple weeks. And before that, we just really haven't seen much in the term of cash being moved.
Matt Bennett, been getting much sleep over the last week and a half. Matt, you know, just has a brand new baby boy from last week, a week ago tomorrow, or Thursday,
on the
24th. Right? On the 24th, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so if I say anything that doesn't make sense, this is my disclaimer. I had to sleep for several nights. But when we look at the, you know, the corn market and we look at the basis, if you remember a year ago I sat on this panel and we talked about basis is going to get really hot, you know, by the time harvest rolled around. There's no question it did. And, you know, while we backed off maybe a little bit during the fall time period, you know, there was a time whenever basis got pretty hot again, before fall really was even half over. And I think what you've seen is like Aaron said, farmers have been tight holders. If you guys got $7 last fall, most of my producers say, well, when's it getting back to $7? You know, I'm not selling anything until it gets back to $7. But the same guys, after the January report, told me they weren't selling anything until it got back to $6. And when it got back to $6, they weren't selling anything until it got back to $6.50. And so farmers have been tight holders, and I think we've had a couple of years here of pretty good income. And so the reason why they've been tight holders is maybe they've got a little more cash on their hands. I think it's been a pretty interesting dynamic to see the spread from old crop to new crop. And I think that one thing you have to keep in mind, you know, when you're selling your new crop corn is you got to divorce yourself from the old crop. You know, whenever Greg put it pretty good, there's a big difference between marketing your old crop and your new crop.
Chuck?
Well, I think there might be one other answer to this question is the numbers from the USDA too big? We were on Commodity Week a few weeks ago. We had a guest on there that feels that livestock usage has been greater. And when you look at this market, I don't think they give us a good basis out of the generosity of their heart. I've been a farmer for a long time, and So I guess our feeling is somewhat different, that the carry-ins aren't necessarily as big, because the idea that all you out there are holding on to your corn like it's gold, I have a hard time believing that there's that much out there. So we take a little bit different perspective that maybe the numbers are not as big as USDA projects. I think when you look at, when you get to really tight situations, when it's fourth down and long, basically you have to make it happen. And when you get to these tight numbers, it's very hard to predict. It's very difficult.
So roughly speaking, there are kind of two things. Farmers, maybe three. Farmers are really tight holders. They don't need the cash. And or maybe the last one, which is it's not actually there. Right? Okay. So we can kind of check on those. I think I know the answer to this one. Anybody need cash? Yeah. Yeah, we don't need, okay. there's one guy back there. Yeah, I need cash. So let's check on the next one. Your tight holders. That means you actually have it. How many have corn to sell? I won't ask how much. How many of you have corn to sell? Okay. Guess that answers our question. Do we need to know whether we're really short? I don't think we can figure that out in this room. But apparently there's a lot of corn out there to sell at this point. So the question is, should they? And how soon? And what is the cash market? The cash market obviously is saying now. Some of these guys are going to say, yeah, now. But they might need it, so you'll have to take that with a... Right? Well, it's true. But we'll see what they have to say.
To preface that, a year ago, on this day a year ago, basis levels in the country were 10 under the May futures. 10 under. Today, country elevators are 10 over. Okay, that tells me right away that there's not as much corn out there relative to demand as there was a year ago. Okay, on July 7th, a year ago, the basis was 20 over at the processors, 20 over the July. A week later, it was 50 over the July. So the basis is going to get better, because we have less corn relative to demand, I think, this year than we did last year. But in order to take advantage of that basis improvement, you may have to wait until we really do get extremely tight. It may take until July. You don't want to not price that corn, because the futures market may not be there. So I think we want to distinguish between futures price and basis. I'm very bullish basis. I'm not as bullish futures. So there's a way to get $7 corn. If you sell 670 futures and then get a 30 over basis, or sell 650 futures and get a 50 over basis. But if you wait for the two to get there, just to get a cash price of seven, the futures may drop before the basis improves enough to offset that.
I think the market's trying to tell us something here. With not only firm basis, we also have spreads inverted. We saw the March, May, I know we're in the delivery period, but into a 5-6 cent inverse. May, July spread went to even money yesterday, I think closed at a penny and a half. The market's trying to tell us that they want the grain. I think we sometimes make this a little too complicated. When the market's trying to tell us something, I think we need to listen. And I think you continue to reward old crop supplies by continuing to sell them as we continue to see hot basis and continuing to see spreads firming. It's not telling us they want that market later, they want that corn now. And I think we have to listen and continue to reward the market on the old crop side.
I'd agree with most of what both of these guys said. And I think whenever I look at basis and I look at whether you want to make cash sales or not, obviously the market's trying to pry it away from you. It has been for some time. But whenever you get into the spring time frame, planning-wise, I've been saying this for the last 3 or 4 weeks, I think that the most important thing whenever the March planning numbers come out is not necessarily the planning numbers within reason. I think it's whether planters are rolling in the Midwest. And if planters are rolling in the Midwest and we're actually going to be looking at a fairly early spring planting time frame, I think what you're going to see is maybe that fear of running out and your basis in the summer months isn't going to get near as hot as what it did this past year, potentially. And the reason for that, I guess, is that I feel like as long as we have timely planning, I think that you're probably not going to see basis fear near as much as what it was last year. whenever we got back to the 650 level, we've been recommending to guys to go ahead and clean up everything other than your gambling bushels. Of course, most of you guys know that your gambling habits are different than maybe some of your neighbors. So it just depends on what your personal preference is. But I feel like if you can't have made money at 650 corn for your 11 crop, something was wrong on your farm, because I think that's a very profitable level.
I think you got to look at the structure. The market has changed. As ethanol has grown, they need to meter that crop out over all the way through the summer and make it to the new crop harvest. So end users have a little bit different ball game than they've had in the past. I think the other thing that's going on in the Eastern Corn Belt, Eastern Corn Belt is probably very close to being deficit corn. So part of basis is trying to transport that corn from the western states back to the east. So as a producer in the Eastern Corn Belt, if you got the corn, again, it's kind of like gold. You need to take advantage of the profit that's there. But as we talked about, as you go forward, it's going to be pretty tight till that new crop combines roll and we get new crop into these facilities.
I'd like you all to think about this one, and you mentioned it, Greg, up front, so we'll start with you. If we roll the planters, we put 94 million acres in, and you believe the 164 bushel trend yield, which gives us, what, about a 14 billion bushel crop? That's a billion bushels larger than any crop we've ever raised, by the way. And we're looking at it in July. And we have basis that really pops. What's futures like? And will that price then, added together, be better than the price today, added together?
Probably not. You could have December futures down around $5, and even with $1.20 inverse, July futures may only be 6.25. So with a 50-cent basis, that's only 6.75. I think July futures today are somewhere around 660, and you can get 30 over basis, I think, at some of the processors. So you're really getting close to $7 cash already. So I think it's been pointed out here, and I would agree. If you can get $6.75 to $7 for your cash corn, I mean, there is something that's being too cute. You know, we've got all the new crop to sell. If we're sold out of old crop corn at $6.75 and it goes higher, great. We've got a lot of new crop corn, and I don't think there's that much new crop corn sold. At least we don't see it on our books yet.
Aaron?
I think we've all seen the scenarios that we plug in the 94, 95 million acres. We have a trend line yield, which, you know, obviously the last 2 years we haven't achieved that. We know what ending stocks is going to do. I mean, we have potential to see ending stocks double fairly quickly, and at 570 futures, obviously 1.6 carryouts not friendly. At those values.
Well, I think that if you have the scenario that you said, Todd, I feel like there's a pretty good chance futures are going to be a fair amount lower than what they are at right now. So obviously, if I'm looking at a situation like that, if I'm looking at a really good planning progress, if we're going to hold this thing together through at least a good glimpse of that, then I'm going to be selling a fair amount of corn, and then I'm going to be looking for a chance to re-own it. There's so many strategies you can put in place that will give you an opportunity just to participate in at least part of it, you know, if you're talking a bull call spread or whatnot. But, you know, if I'm looking at this thing being a large planting, you know, obviously it gives you a potential for a pretty big crop. Now, the one thing that I keep telling guys is that as you push to that 94, 95 million acres, you're bringing in acres to production that maybe aren't, you know, your highest quality acres. And so it's going to be a little harder maybe to get to the 164, 165, even with the genetics we have in this time frame. So, you know, it's pretty tough to say one way or another exactly where this thing is going to go. But if you have 94 or 95, I think it's a good opportunity for you to go ahead and, you know, lock in some profit and then participate on the upside if you want to put something in place to do so.
I have no doubt that we're not going to plant this crop extremely fast. Farmers are geared up. But I would make a point. I mean, we've raised the bar really high, 94 million, some of 95. We got a 164 yield thrown around. Reduce the yield just a few bushel and see what the carryout is. And I think just like we see in politics, numbers are thrown around here. Yeah, it's going to be one of the biggest crops ever, but we got one of the biggest demands ever. Yes, it may double from 800 million to 1.6 But put it in perspective, a stocks to use ratio, yeah, it grows, but it's not overwhelming. So I'm not saying not to sell. I'm just saying the general attitude in corn is pretty pessimistic for the new crop. But I think we've set out some pretty high goals as producers. Every year we try to do that. But it's extremely dry, and it's been an extremely warm winter. I'd just be flexible in how I sold that crop.
Questions out here anybody has? Some numbers that you question, and we'll get back to the feed use and residual number in just a bit. The 164 trend line yield, is that the right number, or is it simply too high? You said plug in something a little lower, and is 164 a good trend number, or is it just the number you're using because that's what USDA says?
I think the trade just USDA is the benchmark. That's the number they throw out there. It's just an educated guess to start the year. But my point is, you have to use high numbers, even in the beans. If you use a smaller yield number or a smaller acreage number, you are in the same position you are this year with a carry out under a billion bushel. Mm-hmm. And when you look at stocks to use ratio, that's a tight number. So I think we can get caught up in these numbers. And you have to look deeper than just saying, oh, my God, we have 94, 95 million acres, and we're going to hit that 164 or 5. I hope we do as a producer. That's the best thing for us to feed the market, put the crop out there, and keep the demand going.
I know, because I talked to Darrell Good yesterday, and you can listen to him on the radio on the way home. I'll be at the beef house, but you can listen to Darrell on the radio on the way home. I've got about 20 minutes with him. He still wants to use a trend line yield of 158 bushels to the acre, which is way lower than 150, 164. I'm sorry, he wants to use 159. And that's a lot lower. That's, I think, about half a billion bushels. So a 13.5 crop instead of a 14. And that takes you to what? A 1.1 carryout, which was a whole lot smaller on 94 million acres. So there's a lot to be said about the new crop, but USDA numbers are the ones that end up being right in the end, one way or the other, and we know that's the case because every time they come out, that's the numbers the trade uses, and then they manipulate them, think about them, as they make their way to the next USDA report. So the 164, you think that's right? Is it a good number or not?
It's basically like I just said before. I feel like with the acreage that we're pushing, if we're going to have a good spring and we bring acreage into production that maybe we don't necessarily count on every year, to me, I can't go with a 164 just simply because the quality of the acreage is not there. I think that, you know, you're pulling CRP acres out of the CRP, and you know, guys say, well, we're going to get almost a 2 million net pickup of CRP acres. Well, why was it put in CRP in the first place? I mean, you have to ask yourself these questions because that's going to factor into what your national yield is. So, you know, I guess I'm kind of with Chuck here. I guess I have a hard time buying into that all up front. You have to remember that, like Chuck said, the best case scenario has been thrown out at us. Where do we have to go from there? You know, you could argue for a higher yield with a perfect, like, perfect weather pattern. I guess you could argue for something like that because we do have excellent genetics. But I think bottom line is when you push this much acreage, you're going to drop your national yield.
164?
That seems a little high. I think you know, the Fabry numbers came out yesterday. I believe they used a 162. Seems to be a little closer to the ballpark that I would probably put it in. I think it's going to be dangerous, though, if you want to continue to factor poor weather into your marketing plan. I think that gets pretty iffy moving forward. So I think if you continue to look at where your profit is, where your profit levels are, and continue to use that to guide your marketing strategy as opposed to saying, I hope if the weather gets hot in July, market's going to rally, I'm going to sell then. I think that gets to be pretty dangerous.
I understand where the USDA comes up with their 164, but I kind of am in Darrell's camp. Maybe not 159, but I understand how he comes up with that. You know, we have not had a Midwest-wide disaster since 1988. And in the 80s, we had three of them, 1980, 1983, 1988, and right around here in 1991. Other than 1995, I mean, we've gone 15, 20 years, you know, without a terrible crop. So, you know, I understand how the USDA can come up with these big numbers, but maybe we've just been fortunate and the weather's been extremely nice, and maybe that'll continue. I don't know, but, you know, 164 is just a guess. 159 is just a guess. We don't know, and nobody does. That's why the market's at 575. We probably won't be at 575 this fall. We could be a buck and a half higher, or we could be a buck and a half lower. One thing we haven't talked about is the outside markets. I think that's one thing that we want to keep. You know, we can talk about the weather, which we can always talk about the weather, but we won't know really until much later. And in the meantime, there's so many other things going on in this in the world. You know, the thing that really concerns me, as Wayne mentioned, was the Mideast tensions. And I've asked traders in Chicago, what does an attack on Iran do to prices? And I get conflicting opinions. You know, oil prices obviously go higher. Gold prices obviously go higher. But does ethanol go higher, which allows corn to go higher? Or do all the traders take their money out of the markets other than gold and oil and do what I call put under the mattress, you know, just go flight to safety, you know, in which case your stock markets go down and all your commodities go down? You know, that seems to be the consensus as to what would happen if Middle East tensions escalate. So, you know, I think we want to keep an eye not just on the weather, not just on the size of our crop, but this market is so much bigger than just the weather. You know, the funds at one point in time owned 2 billion bushels of corn on paper out of a 13 billion bushel crop. So when they get in and they get out for whatever reason, they can move the market, and it may not be because we're getting rain or not getting rain.
Can I have each of you think about and discuss something that Chuck suggested earlier, that the ethanol plants, because they feed on corn, they have to have it continually at the same amount most of the time. How has that changed the basis levels? I understand that it has raised the need and demand locally, but how has it changed it from today, say, till, I don't know, 10 years ago? What's the difference?
I think we're living it right now, Todd. That's exactly why the basis is doing what it's doing. As Greg suggested, that's why it's probably going to be higher later on. They didn't have to have... there was a time window where they could get by and wait for that new crop to come. Unless they're going to shut the facility down, they have to have so many bushels in there every day. That's changed the structure of the market significantly from 4 or 5 years ago.
Has it changed the competition in the places that you as TGM, for instance, can market to? And does it make it easier on a grain elevator?
There's no question about it. We don't have ethanol plants really close to all of our locations, but we have them close to several of our locations. We've got 30 locations. And so we, in our southwestern area, we can go down to Lincoln Land, and then our southwestern area, we can go down to the river. So there's no question, whenever you're talking basis levels, that regionally especially, they're the leaders. Whenever you get close to your ethanol plants, they're the leaders on where you see basis appreciation, and then it just trickles out from there.
I think a perfect example is Northern Illinois. Do we have any people here from Northern Illinois?
A couple.
I mean, before 5-10 years ago, you had one market, right, and that was the river. And now you have we have elevators up there that have bid sheets that are a page long right now. A lot of that's been changed by the ethanol plant. I think that continues to make more competition and continues to give you a better price.
Yeah, we own three ethanol plants. We run three ethanol plants, and I can tell you the buyers at those ethanol plants are under a little bit different pressure than what I am as a buyer to a grain elevator. You know, we have weekly meetings and monthly meetings, and if we don't buy enough grain 1 week, you know, we kind of get out there and get some more grain bought next week. That doesn't work at an ethanol plant. They have to have 100,000 bushels every day. And if they don't buy their quota 1 day or 2 days, you know, they're made aware that they need to get out there and buy it. So I think you're seeing basis levels reflect that strong demand and that sense of urgency. You know, it's not just a nice smooth curve like it used to be. It's I need it now, and then maybe they buy too much, and now I don't need it, but next week they need it again. So I think you'll continue to see that as these ethanol plants continue to run.
Okay, so there are several things that are at work this season. We have demand. We have the ethanol plants that nearly are running at mandate, and we're about 95% close. We'll be at 2015 all the way up to the mandate for ethanol production. But they're running at capacity. Sometimes we produce enough ethanol that we actually export it. And we had a shorter crop. The question, though, is in this case, and I was building up to it, is it possible, and I ask this up front, that overs could become a norm in our part of the world? They are at the moment, but they're extenuating circumstances. In a normal growing season with a normal crop size, and I don't know that next year is not going to, if we have 94 million acres, that's not going to be a normal growing season at 164 bushels to the acre. But in a relatively speaking, a normal type of growing season, would a over be expected in our part of the world? Not usually. Aaron?
No. I mean, that's kind of like saying, are we going to get used to $7 corn? I mean, is that where we're at now? I don't think so. I don't think any of us can safely say that $6 or $7 corn is a new plateau, and I don't think we can say that overs are anywhere near a new plateau either.
Everybody says no, right?
Yeah, I mean, by definition, the delivery, you could always deliver corn, you know, at zero along the river. So, you know, unless the demand is out of whack geographically, it really shouldn't get a whole lot more than option price. But the last 2 years, obviously, the demand in the eastern Corn Belt has been much greater than the supply.
There's no question that last year, whenever we were sitting here talking about basis, we said, I think one word we used was regionally speaking, and it's the same thing as what Greg's saying. You know, bottom line is we shipped our elevator. We shipped corn out east, you know, to Ohio and Pennsylvania because they had ethanol plants that they needed corn, and they ran out of corn. They didn't have any corn. So we shipped a few million bushels that we traditionally keep in this part of the world or send south east. I mean, we'd never send it east. But, you know, that changed the structure of the basis. And in certain regional areas, basis got extremely hot. And so I think if you come out here with, you know, a 94 planting and you know, a big yield and we're not so worried about running out of corn in any area of the Midwest, there's no question this basis is going to back off.
I think it's going to take a while, though, to build this up. I think you really need to have the record crop. And we used to ship the corn to the feeding areas. And that, you know, the livestock numbers are low. It's still profitable, but as we build those numbers up, or again, if the USDA is off in that feed and residual area, Todd, again, you take 200 million off here and there, it just says that this tightness will continue at least another year, I believe.
I don't want you to give me a number for USDA's grain stocks report, but how wide could it swing on March 31 at the end of the year or at the end of this month when we get that next grain stocks report?
We've seen some big surprises from USDA in the last several years. I think maybe 100 million might be something that they might cut back and say we've used maybe more for ethanol, maybe a little more for the feed, but I'd look for 100 million reduction possibly.
Anybody else have a guess on what that grain stocks number will say about feed and residual?
I'm not sure what the USDA is going to do on any report, to be perfectly honest with you. And if I was going to be doing anything leading up to the USDA report, I'd either be buying a call and selling, or buying a call and selling a put, or buying a call and buying a put, or selling a call and selling a put. Do something to take advantage of the volatility leading up to this thing, and then when the market goes extreme one way or the other, you're probably going to be able to liquidate one side and make money on the other, too.
I would say plus or minus 300 million bushels. That seems to be a pretty a common error as far as what the market's expecting is that 300 million bushel mark. So any side of that. So who knows?
Yeah, how many quarterly stocks reports have we had now in a row? Five or six? I mean, you're going back 2 years. The number has been 200 to 300 million bushels off what the so-called guess average consensus was. So I wouldn't be surprised, which, you know, that this will be 200 million off. I just wish I knew which way it was going to be 200 million off.
One way or the other. And what's the likelihood of a reverse in June? Probably pretty good, right? I mean, the grain stocks reports have been, and you'll hear Daryl talk about this afternoon too, have been really wild, especially in March and June. And we really don't know what that number is, I guess, until we get to the last quarter of the year. So it's just a kind of a guess up until we get to September, right? Okay, so we haven't talked much about soybeans. Anybody got a cash grain question about corn they want answered? Yes.
The usage, if they're off 150 or 300 cash grain, which way on corn?
Okay. So if they're off by, well, let's say they're off by 100 million bushels, and I suppose they change it by 100 million bushels, and they could change it either way. What happens?
Corn's been in a sideways trading pattern here for quite some time. I think it's waiting to kind of make up its mind, but if they reduce it down, barring we don't have a military conflict here, which I would agree that's a major negative, I think the market's led by the basis and poised to make a move to the upside here.
Anybody else?
If you get a bullish stocks report, I don't think you need to give the farmer any more incentive to be bullish. I mean, they're holding on to corn as it is, and if all the reports say corn's going higher, I mean, they've got a cushion. I think, you know, they understand, you understand you can sell corn now and make money, but you can also give up 30, 40 cents and still make good money if you had decent yields. So you've got a cushion in there, and I think farmers are using that, and they're saying, well, if it goes higher, great. And they've got some line in the sand drawn that as long as it doesn't go below X, you know, they're going to wait and see if they can get a little bit more. So if we get a bullish stocks report, you know, farmers just have that much more of a cushion.
Let's take up the cash side of the soybean market, deal with new crop for me, Chuck.
I think the numbers are real interesting on the beans also. When you look at 75 million acres of beans, they use the second highest yield ever at 44 bushel, and the carryout's only 200 million. We've done the math. You take the yield down to 41 or somewhere in that neighborhood where we've been the last several years, or 40, you're in the minus category. So, again, these numbers that are thrown out there, they're top-end numbers. Again, as a producer, I hope we obtain those. That's always the goal. But that side of the story is being left out when you talk about, big acres and big yield.
There's no question on the bean market that a lot's changed really in the last month. I mean, we entered the month of February when we were going to set our insurance price, and really it made more sense to plant corn as far as the ratio went. You guys can read the same things I can. At the end of the month, it made more sense to plant beans. But as far as the insurance price, I think it's about 2.2 to 1 or right in that area, which really doesn't lead me one way or the other as far as acreage goes. I agree with Chuck. They're throwing out the best-case scenario, and on beans, I guess I'm not really buying in just yet to, you know, the big yield, and I have a hard time, I guess, with the acreage, really. 74, I guess, is the number a lot of guys are throwing out, and I don't know that I would disagree with that too much, but I'm not going to get too aggressive on selling my beans just yet. I think there's too many things that are kind of working in the favor of the bean market. Short-term-wise, we're extremely overbought, and the person has to keep that in mind. But the bottom line is, I think that, you know, it's pretty tough to make a case right now for beans going significantly lower until we know a little bit more about South America.
I think on the old crop side, I would be a seller as we continue to see rallies moving up. I think we're getting some advantageous result from the fact that Brazil's having problems loading beans. I think they'll get that issue straightened out. I think they're 3 to 4 million metric tons behind right now as far as loadings, and I think we're benefiting from that, seeing some of that business switch up here from China. But I think that's going to go away, and I think we're going to see some of this export premium go away a little bit here as we move into the spring and summer months, which is typical, right? We're typically front-loaded on bean exports. We've been able to drag that out a little bit just because of problems in South America. So I think on the old crop side, I'd continue to be a seller and reward some of these strong basis levels.
And Greg?
This report on Friday is going to be a very key indicator of, you know, how low that old crop, how low that crop is in Brazil. And then, based on what we saw here, you know, there weren't near as many hands that went up for people still holding old crop beans as what there was old crop corn. Now, basis levels wouldn't suggest that. I mean, like I said, we're 10-15 over on corn. We're 10-15 under on beans. So that tells me that maybe there's still beans out there. You know, the demand hasn't been that great. So maybe there's, you know, nobody wants what nobody has. Maybe it's a case of that. I don't know. But, you know, I still think that beans have some room to go up, especially on the new crop. Now, old crop, you know, yes, they have room to go up too. I still think beans have room to go up, but at some point in time, 1350 beans probably need to be sold.
Give these folks a nice round of applause, please. Chuck Shelby and Aaron Curtis and Greg Johnson and Matt Bennett, thank you so much for being here with us for this program this morning. You're going to take about 20 minutes for a break, and then we'll call you back, and we'll get started with our corn panel.